Hello there. Today is Wednesday, August the 10th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, opponents accuse Donald Trump of calling for Hillary Clinton's assassination.
If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks.
We're going to Rio for the latest on the Summer Games. Russia's president wants to restore full ties with Turkey. Also ahead, prepare for the night sky to put on a spectacular show. It's all on today's International Edition. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, less than 3 months before Election Day, and Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is trying to reset his struggling campaign and regain momentum after a period that's been marred by controversy and sliding poll numbers. But on Tuesday, he made another statement that has opponents outraged.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick... If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But
all critics are interpreting this as Trump asking gun owners to assassinate Clinton, but Trump says he was merely talking about the power of voters. Still, he faces more prominent Republican defections. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more.
Donald Trump's latest campaign reboot includes a renewed focus on the economy, which many voters say is their top concern this election year.
We are ready to show the world that America is back, bigger and better and stronger than ever before.
Trump outlined his plans to cut taxes, spur job growth, and renegotiate trade deals in a speech in Detroit that was interrupted repeatedly by protesters. Trump is hoping to turn his campaign around after a difficult week that saw rival Hillary Clinton surge into big leads in national and key state polls. Trump surrogates, like former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, tried to calm jittery Republicans.
I remember George Bush the first being 16 points down to Dukakis going into September. So let's, you know, calm down. Everyone should calm down about it.
Campaigning in Florida, Clinton urged voters to be skeptical of any Trump reboot, and she countered what she described as Trump's pessimistic view of the future.
And I am proud to be on the side of those who want to build a positive, optimistic future, who want to get the economy working for everybody, not just those on the top.
Trump's best chance to alter the dynamic of the race may not come until the presidential debate set to begin next month, says analyst Tom DeFrank.
I continue to believe that this is going to come down to the first debate in Hofstra University in Long Island on September the 26th. I think by the end of that week, that's a Monday night.
We'll know.
And I think by the end of that week, we will probably know who the next president is going to be.
In the meantime, Trump should avoid missteps like his recent feud with the parents of a U.S. Army captain who died in the Iraq War, says Kyle Condit.
And I also think that they're the sorts of things that might turn off a small but significant part of the Republican electorate, particularly those who might be more internationally focused and might think that Trump just has too many rough edges to be president.
Trump is also dealing with more Republican defections, including Maine Senator Susan Collins and 50 former national security officials who signed a letter warning that Trump would be the most reckless president in U.S. history. Former CIA Director Michael Hayden and former Homeland Security Secretaries Tom Ridge and Michael Chertoff were among those who signed the letter. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, Clinton, who was campaigning in Miami, Florida, where 4 new cases of the Zika virus have been suspected to have spread by mosquitoes have been reported.
I would very much urge the leadership of Congress to call people back for a special session and get a bill passed. Get a bill that is focused on combating Zika passed.
Well, she said this is an epidemic that will only get worse. The Senate has passed a Zika funding measure, but the House recessed before it could reach a compromise with the Senate on a final bill. Well, let's check in now with the lovely and talented G. Abby Lee to find out more about what's been trending online today. Hi, G.
Hi, Lori. A very unusual selfie is dominating the Rio Olympics tweets. It's a selfie by South and North Korean Olympic gymnast taken by Reuters. That photo has been around since Friday, but it seems like people just cannot stop talking about it. They were schmoozing before competing to qualify for the artistic women's gymnastics. The North, Hong Eun-jung, advanced to the next round, but the South, Eun-ju, didn't.
So I didn't get a chance yet to see the selfie, but tell us how the photo actually came to be trending on social media.
Sure. It seems like president of Eurasia Group Ian Bremmer, who is very prolific on Twitter, by the way, is the one who made it visible on there. His handle is @IanBremmer, and he also teaches at NYU. He tweeted the photo and captioned it, "Gymnasts from North and South Korea take a selfie together. This is why we do the Olympics." More than 2,100 people retweeted that, and just as many people liked that tweet.
So tell us more about some of the media reaction.
Sure. Business Insider touted it as the most iconic photo of the Olympics, and a nonprofit called Liberty in North Korea, or LINK, also shared a photo on its Facebook. The top comment to LINK's post reads like this: "Honestly, I'm just wondering about how the North Korean athletes feel about such cultural exchanges. It would be impossible for them not to learn what's really happening outside their country." She's, of course, pointing out the reclusive nature of the Kim Jong-un regime.
Anything else trending on social media?
A trending hashtag for Tuesday was #NationalBookLoversDay. August 9th is the unofficial holiday for celebrating bibliophiles. That includes me, and I'm guessing you too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're journalists after all. The former Beatles member, Paul McCartney, has one of the most popular tweets using that hashtag. He posted a photo of himself reading a book with the caption, "Love that book. Happy Book Lovers Day." But from the photo, it's not clear which book he is referring to, but I'm really going to find that out and let you know tomorrow. That's all for me today.
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. A Texas baby is confirmed to have died of Zika-linked microcephaly. Ferguson police make reforms 2 years after riots. For the first time in 25 years, the U.S. has an ambassador in Somalia. The U.N. says 2 million in Syria's Aleppo are without running water or electricity. And a new study finds reading may extend lifespan. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Russian President Vladimir Putin has agreed to work toward restoring full relations with Turkey. Putin spoke Tuesday after meeting with Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan in St. Petersburg. International Edition's Sarah Williams spoke with VOA Moscow correspondent David Scharf about the meeting.
Well, certainly it means that both sides are wanting to roll back some of the losses in the economic ties and trade that occurred after the Turkish Air Force plane shot down the Russian jet bomber that was just along Turkey's border in Syria in November of last year. And after that occurred, of course, relations dropped dramatically, and Russia instituted economic sanctions against Turkey very quickly, including blocking imports of Turkish food, agricultural products, not allowing Russian tourists to visit Turkey, which are very important for the Turkish tourism industry. They're the second largest group of tourists to visit Turkey. So billions of dollars in trade and economic ties that were essentially severed completely, not to mention the concerns that this could explode into something more serious, such as outright conflict between the two sides. So certainly now that ties have changed very dramatically to improve after President Erdogan has apologized to Russia. They're looking to quickly reestablish those trade links. Russia has already allowed tourism to resume to Turkey, and that's going to provide a big boost to the Turkish economy, not to mention when those economic sanctions are lifted, which will probably happen gradually, but rather quickly.
Well, certainly after last month's failed coup in Turkey, it seems like Mr. Erdogan was Mr. Erdogan was strongly criticized by most Western leaders. It seems like Mr. Erdogan is looking for, you know, new friends in other places.
Yes, after the Turkish government's response to the coup, the thousands of people that have been purged from the Turkish military and government, this is certainly something that has been criticized very strongly by Western leaders. And President Erdogan in Turkey did not take kindly to that. He expected a lot more sympathy for his administration support from Western leaders. On the other side of that coin, Russian President Vladimir Putin was extremely quick to call President Erdogan and express his support for Turkey, express his condemnation of the attempted coup. And then when we saw these horrible terrorist attacks that occurred at Istanbul Airport, again, President Putin was very quick to call and express condolences to Turkey and express his solidarity. So there's been attempts by both sides to mend the broken fence and to restore those ties that historically have been, in modern times, been rather tight between Turkey and Russia, despite the fact that Turkey is a member of NATO, the North Atlantic, military alliance.
Well, this is all going on, meanwhile, as there's a five-year civil war in Syria, and Russia has participated in a bombing campaign in support of the Syrian government. Of course, Ankara is supporting rebel groups in Syria. The two countries, Ankara and Moscow, I guess they still see very differently on that issue.
That's very much going to be a difficult issue for the two sides to come to any sort of an agreement on. They have said that the issue of Syria will be discussed in the talks between President Putin and President Erdogan. But of course, because they're on the exact opposite sides of the fence on this issue, Turkey very much wants to see Bashar al-Assad, the leader of Syria, leave power and for some kind of change to happen in the government there. Whereas Russia, of course, has been supporting Damascus through a bombing campaign that started last year. This is how the ties originally between the two sides, Turkey and Russia, began to get cold.
Well, the United Nations Security Council has been unable to condemn the launch of a missile by North Korea following yet another ballistic missile launch last Wednesday that landed in or near Japanese-controlled waters for the first time. Joining me now for more on this, VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Steve Herman, who is in New York, home to the United Nations. Steve, this is a big setback for the international community's efforts to punish North Korea.
Yes, absolutely. But I don't think this comes as much of a surprise. And many people will ask really what the impact is going to be one way or the other, because we've had numerous UN Security Council resolutions condemning North Korea, and North Korea has repeatedly defied those resolutions by continuing with ballistic missile tests and nuclear weapons tests as well. The different spin, I think, on what has happened now is China linking this to what many of the other diplomats would consider a completely different topic involving the United States and South Korea.
How so?
Well, the Chinese wanted language in there referring to the deployment of an anti-missile ballistic system from the United States in South Korea, which Beijing is quite opposed to. And, of course, that was acceptable to two of the sponsors of this latest resolution, the United States and Japan, who, of course, are saying that this is a legitimate defense system to put in South Korea precisely because of the threat from these missile launches in North Korea.
What is Japan saying about this situation? I know they're very concerned.
Yeah. Well, the Japanese were particularly incensed by this latest ballistic missile test because one of the rockets fell in or very near Japan's exclusive economic zone. If you look at the map of the track of the missile, you can see it's just off the coast of Akita Prefecture in the Sea of Japan. So the way that many Japanese are viewing this is each one of these tests that the North Koreans are further advancing their capabilities, and with the nuclear miniaturization program, if North Korea were indeed able to miniaturize a nuclear weapon and put it on a warhead with these intermediate range ballistic missiles, they could very easily hit anywhere in Japan. So South Korea, of course, nervous about this, the United States, but the Japanese are particularly nervous because they feel that they would be a primary target.
Well, I know after the Security Council meeting last week, Ambassador Samantha Power was rejecting suggestions that the decision to deploy the anti-missile defense system in South Korea had provoked the latest missile tests by North Korea.
Not exactly clear whether that is the case or not, but certainly there's been these sort of tit-for-tat responses. North Koreans have a provocation. There are resolutions that are passed, and then there are build-ups in exercises or further cooperation between South Korea and the United States on increasing the defense capabilities on South Korean soil. And then when the South Koreans and the Americans say or do something, then that apparently provokes a very vicious commentary in the North Korean media, followed by threats and some sort of action. And so we just kind of see this increasing cycle of tension going on. But it's very clear that the initial provocations have been North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile programs.
And it really doesn't seem like they're deterred by much of anything. You know, resolutions and sanctions don't seem to be working.
If you talk to most of the analysts, they'll tell you that very bluntly. And the diplomats are loath to say that diplomacy hasn't been working. But if you speak to them in private, they will admit that they're extremely frustrated that nothing seems to be working with the North Koreans. And most of the international community feels that it is only the Chinese who are able to put on the requisite amount of pressure to change the North Koreans. But then when you talk to Chinese diplomats in private, they'll say they're very frustrated with the North Koreans and we can't control them either. That argument isn't really totally bought by a lot of the international community because of the trade links with China that China could really clamp down. But the Chinese fear a collapse of North Korea. They don't want to be stuck with that government falling apart right on its borders and potentially sending thousands, if not millions, of refugees into China, a security problem for the People's Liberation Army.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. Thanks so much. VOA Senior Diplomatic Correspondent Steve Herman. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
This is International Edition. Day four of the Olympic Games in Rio featured at least one upset. Defending champion Serena Williams is out of the competition after a stunning loss in the third round of women's tennis singles. Williams made more than three dozen unforced errors, including eight double faults, five of them in one game. Meanwhile, American Michael Phelps won his 21st gold medal Tuesday after a victory in the 4x200-meter freestyle relay. An hour earlier, Phelps snagged his 20th gold in the 200-meter butterfly. Joining me now from Rio, freelance journalist Samantha Loss. Hi, Sam. The U.S. women's gymnastics team also won gold for a second consecutive Olympics.
I didn't get to see it, but I heard that they won the team competition, and I can tell you that I'm not surprised. I saw them actually in the team qualifying round 2 days ago, and they were hands down the best team there. They are in a different league. Simone Biles, Ali Raisman, Gabby Douglas, they are just leaps and bounds above everybody else and really nailed all of their routines. And as a former gymnast myself, it was a true highlight to get to see them compete on the world stage.
What other events have you been able to see?
So we saw fencing a couple of days ago, which was really cool. It's not a sport I've really been exposed to, but the way the venue was set up, it was a very intimate, smaller venue, so it was really easy to see everything. And I learned a lot about how the sport works. I saw two rounds of gymnastics, the women's team qualifying the other day. And then today we were lucky enough to go to beach volleyball, which was fantastic. It's right on Copacabana Beach. You can see the beautiful water sitting in the stands. And one of the highlights of this entire experience for me was one of the matches today involved, it was Italy women's beach volleyball versus Egypt. And this is the first time that Egypt has competed as a female team in the beach volleyball. And as you might expect, they were slightly outmatched by Italy. And everyone in the crowd really rallied around Egypt. And at some points during this match, the cheers were louder for Egypt than they were earlier in the day when Brazil was playing. And everyone really rallied around this team and supported them and encouraged them. And at the end of the match, the two athletes, you know, waved and were so grateful for all of the support. And even though they lost pretty handedly, they were so appreciative of the experience. And to me, it just kind of embodied what the Olympics is all about. And it was a very special moment.
Let's talk a little bit about the atmosphere, because there were a lot of controversies leading up to the Olympics. What's the general mood there?
Honestly, I have to say we've been really impressed. There's tons of people around to help. There's lots of signs. Everything in the subway is in Portuguese and then in English as well. The biggest problem that we've had is out at the main Olympic venues in Barra, there seemed to be a shortage of water and soda and snacks and things like that. So after the first day, we planned ahead and we brought some of our own snacks with us. But I think that those kinds of growing pains would happen anywhere, not just in Rio. We felt relatively safe walking around. A lot of people were concerned about security. They have the National Guard, the Army, the police, and they're everywhere. So I definitely noticed a lot of security, and I think that everyone's taking things very seriously. And I think most people here in Rio really want those of us who are here from out of town to have a good experience and to see the best sides of the city. And we've had a really positive experience so far.
Well, we certainly appreciate your taking the time to talk to us from Rio, journalist Samantha Loss. Thanks so much. Well, this week brings another spectacular show, the annual Perseid meteor showers. But astronomers say this year especially will be even bigger and more spectacular showing of those shooting stars. Joining me now to explain, NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Greg, tell us about it.
The Perseid meteor shower is ongoing right now, and it's visible if you go outside at about 11 o'clock to midnight. Look out to the northeast or directly overhead, and this is good for observers in the northern hemisphere and even some southern hemisphere observers that may be just below the equator. And it's a spectacular meteor shower that's going to peak on the night of August 11th to the 12th.
How is it that astronomers are able to predict when these will happen, and how are they able to predict that they'll be even better this year?
Astronomers have noticed throughout the ages is that there are certain times in the year as our planet goes around its orbit of the sun that these meteors, which we can see or we call falling stars on any given night of the year, they happen sometimes where there's a lot more than normal. And it took modern astronomy to figure out that what was happening is our planet is going through the debris tails of comets, and in one case, an asteroid that has flung the debris off these beautiful tails that they make into the solar system. And about the same time every year, we pass through these debris fields, and our atmosphere comes like a big vacuum cleaner, and these little pieces of debris hit the atmosphere at very high speed, get superheated, and we see the light from the atmosphere getting superheated by these incoming objects. And this year, some of the people who watch this have predicted that we're going to have a bigger number, maybe 150 or more than usual, because in November 2014, the planet Jupiter, with its big gravity influence, hit one of these, hit the tail of Comet Swift-Tuttle, moved it a little bit, so this year it's closer to Earth, which is why we're expecting a higher rate than usual of the Perseids. We'll have to wait and see and watch.
Well, everybody says, you know, when you see a falling star, make a wish. You'll be making a whole lot of wishes out there with that many.
And odds are one of them's got to come true, Lori. The best time to look on the night of the 11th to the 12th is after the moon sets, which is 1 a.m. local time. And when the moon's out of the sky, just kind of lay back, get comfortable, a lounge chair, a blanket, lay it down on a nice grassy area, and try to have a view that is free of any really bright light or buildings. And you should see at least a couple every minute or so. And if you're lucky, maybe you'll see that outburst, which could really be something.
Was NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Thank you for your time. You've been listening to International Edition. We are glad you could join us, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for being here, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Carter. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. Bye.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Iran's Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei and other Iranian officials have complained that the United States has not lived up to its commitments under the Iran deal in not ensuring that Iran fully benefits economically from the lifting of nuclear-related sanctions. But as Secretary of State John Kerry has said, he has personally gone out of his way to engage with banks and businesses to make clear that legitimate business with Iran is now permitted.
We have lifted the sanctions we said we would lift, and we have completely kept faith with both the black and white print as well as the spirit of this effort.
U.S. officials, including Acting Treasury Undersecretary Adam Zubin, have observed that there are reasons why certain banks and companies may be reluctant to do business with Iran.
Some are concerned about their financial transparency, the designation of Iran as a high-risk jurisdiction by FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, the world standard-setting body for anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing. Others are noting concerns about corruption as well as regulatory and other obstacles to conducting business in Iran. And still others cite Iran's provocative behavior outside the nuclear file, including its active support for terrorism and its ballistic missile testing.
Mr. Zubin says that while Iran pursues more business in the aftermath of the nuclear deal, it is incumbent on Iran to address such problems, to undertake meaningful reforms, and create an environment in which businesses feel secure. Additionally, Mr. Zubin makes clear, we have been and will continue to be very careful to deliver on the promises we made to Iran throughout the negotiations. That means proactively providing clear guidance about the type of commerce that is now permitted.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials. We'll be right back.
is for, what's